we look at Friday, Friday is the 6th of December. Yeah. I mean, well, October. Yes, we are forward-thinking, aren't we? Well, we've got the 5th of October, Thursday, and the 6th. Now, you'll see on the 5th, we've got deliberations, etc., debt relief, and then Friday again, deliberations, debt relief, and an engagement with the French ambassador on the small business program. This will be, the French ambassador can only come the following week. It's not really about the small business program per se. It's actually about job creation and entrepreneurship, you know, the whole supply development and that kind of thing. So we'll just get that a little bit clearer. So Mr. Hermans has asked me on behalf of the staff if they could utilize that day to do, what was it, prepare the budget report or whatever. There's a lot of work involved here, and our researchers only just returned from Geneva on Saturday. So I said, not a problem, given that the French ambassador can't come. And, you know, we'd like then to take that Friday and hand it over to either Manco and the staff. But we need more time for the debt relief. Has anyone got a proposal? Honourable Van Schalkwyk?
Chairperson, thank you. I'm looking at Thursday the 5th. And I see we are meeting until 1 o'clock, so I would like to propose that we meet until 4 o'clock, so that we can catch up on the other issues on the day.
Think of that. I'm looking at Honourable William.
Chairperson, I'd like to second that proposal.
Any objections? No. All right, we're going to go through with this. Just while we're looking at that committee matter, when we had our last meeting, before we went into the constituency break, we had a very serious meeting. All our meetings are serious, but this one in particular dealt with localization, procurement, job creation, promotion of the Black Industrialist Program, etc. And you will recall in that meeting, members of the committee were very concerned at the ineffective responses we were getting at that moment from Transnet, but concurred that localization itself and procurement was not being effectively implemented by the state-owned companies. But we said that we would ask the staff to prepare these terms of reference. I'm not sure if they were prepared, but that was a decision of that committee, although the resolution could not be taken because, like today, we didn't have a quorum. We had a quorum to open the committee, but not to take a decision. Now, we still don't have a quorum to take a decision. As you can see, we need at least six people, seven of our numbers. Yeah. So we'll have to leave that over for tomorrow and take the decision then. But we would hope that that was done in the terms of reference. On that particular note, then, we won't be meeting as a committee on Friday, this Friday. Is that clear? Right. Let's get back to the work in hand, and that is, of course, the National Consumer Commission, and we've got a team here in front of us led by the commissioner being Mr. Ibrahim Mohammed. Thank you for being here with us this morning, and of course, the you do have someone else there as well. I'm just looking here if you signed all the documents here when you came in. You didn't. That's the CFO, yeah. So we do need that here, but I'm sure you'll sign it. Just give me that one. And then Margaret can hand it across. All right. And then the DTI in that regard still remains, of course, we've got Mr. Demana, but specifically in this area, we have, let's see, is it debt relief there, SAD, NCC, I'm looking at the DTI. Who's here? Yes, did you not sign this here this morning? All right, on here. Let's get it done properly. This is scrappy. Right. So the group chief operating officer acting is Ms. Nontombi Matamela. Thank you. We have, I've said, the chief director, Dr. Damana. Right, thank you. And those are the next three people for this event. All right. So do please go ahead. I see here, no, we don't have it. Right. Commissioner, won't you please start?
Thank you, Chair, and good day, honourable members. I am pleased to report and to present the annual report to this committee. The outline of the presentation will include key highlights, the strategic objectives, achievement against planned targets, financial management, the Auditor General of South Africa's report, and the key challenges and financial projection. Thank you. I shall then begin on slide 4 with the key highlights of the MCC for the 2016-2017 financial year. The MCC fully met 17 out of its 19 targets. This reflects an improvement on the previous year's performance, where only 11 out of the 18 targets were fully met. Of the two targets that were not fully met, the MCC met approximately 90% thereof. These include the finalization of the franchise code and the procurement of the opt-out register. I shall deal with the franchise code later on in this same slide, but the opt-out register, honourable members, is a massive project. It seeks to regulate direct marketing. All of us are victim to unwanted direct marketing, whether it be by way of telephone, emails, SMS texts, posts, WhatsApp, and whatever other methods of communication are used by these direct marketers. We have now appointed a transactional advisor, even though there had been delays in doing so. The delays were primarily caused by the fact that during our first procurement phase, there were not enough bidders, and we then had to re-advertise, and this took us, it took time, and therefore we were unable to meet the deadline. So it was beyond the control of the NCC at the time. The transactional advisor had been appointed, though, and a feasibility study has been completed. With regards to the opt-out register, it's very cost-prohibitive project. The National Treasury has assisted us thus far, and they have funded to a large extent the appointment of our transactional advisor. The feasibility study has indicated that we no longer go the PPP route, the public-private partnership route, but rather to establish a trading entity ourselves. And the funding thereof still needs to be worked out with the National Treasury, who we hope and trust will assist further with the funding thereof. And as I said, the delays have been occasioned because much dependence is placed on others and not on the NCC. But hopefully, within the next financial year, we would have procured and finalized the opt-out register and that it would be operational. The next point that I wish to bring to the attention of the committee is our timeshare inquiry. After receiving thousands and thousands of complaints for a lengthy period, and having tried to take the matters to the National Consumer Tribunal unsuccessfully, due to points in limine and technical issues and so on, and prohibitive costs for lawyers and so on, I decided that we should, together with my team, that I should appoint a panel that would look at all the issues and all the problems associated with the timeshare industry. The timeshare industry is important in South Africa. It affects the hospitality industry, which falls within the priority areas of government, especially tourism. It affects local tourists largely, and there have been abuses of the worst kind perpetrated by these timeshare companies. The appointed panel of three persons have been on consultations, we've had public sessions where consumers are invited to come and address the panel on all the types of problems and issues that they experience. The panel has been to all nine provinces. We shall be, because of the demand in Gauteng, we shall be doing a second session in Gauteng within the next 2 or 3 weeks. The panel would eventually, they would also consult all the other stakeholders, including the regulators, the industry itself, and so on, and they would eventually, within the 6-month period that were allocated to them, produce a report with recommendations to me. I would then have to consider this report and decide on appropriate steps to be taken thereafter. It may include requests for legislative reform. So this is quite an important area of work that the NCC is engaged in. With regards to the expiry of unused data, this is a huge matter. It affects millions of our consumers all across the length and breadth of this country, from the poorest of the poor to the most wealthy. An investigation was done by the NCC previously into the concerns of consumers with regards to compliance-related issues within the communication sector, within the telephone data sector. The compliance issues were addressed except for the data problem. Now, this is a major issue, as I've just said. And to address this issue, the NCC and ICASA decided to work together, and we formed a joint task team. The issue of the expiry of unused data featured most prominently in our discussions. The task team interrogated the issue, and there was also engagement with all the operators separately on exactly how they handle data, when they expire, how they are, how their packages are worked out and so on, and how they dealt with the issue. The NCC is very concerned about the on sale of unused data, and that the current practices by the operators appear to be in contravention of the Consumer Protection Act. The Consumer Protection Act allows for any prepaid voucher, if I may use the term, to be valid for a period of 3 years. It further provides that whatever balance, credit balance, remains on that voucher as the consumer uses it, remains the property of the consumer and is not the property of the operator. This would mean that operators are not really allowed to keep these funds within their own business accounts, but that it should be held elsewhere, probably more like trust monies. Now, these are our concerns, and on top of it, operators, data expires within 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, 6 months, and so on. In our view, not in compliance with the Consumer Protection Act. The ICASA has published certain regulations, and we are concerned about the content of some of these regulations. We're very happy with the way in which they deal with the issue of bill shock. Bill shock is where a consumer suddenly receives a bill for 2,000 or 3,000 rand and doesn't know where it came from. So the way in which they deal with that, the commission is entirely happy with. We are concerned, though, about the expiry dates, and we have commented on these regulations. The National Consumer Commission is the chair of the Consumer Policy and Law Committee of the SADC region. We've just been made chair. In the past, consumer issues and competition issues were lumped together at SADC. And most of the conversation, 90% plus, was dedicated to competition issues, and consumer issues took somewhat of the back seat. Because of our agitation, a new separate consumer committee has been established to deal only with consumer issues, and South Africa is chairing that committee. There are 14 members, I think, of SADC. Many of them do not have progressive or any consumer protection legislation. South Africa has, even if we say it ourselves, world-class consumer protection legislation, and we are acting as a guide to many SADC members who look to us for assistance and guidance with regards to the consumer law reform process and so on. Honourable members, product recalls. Sorry, before I get to product recalls, the NCC also chairs the Consumer Protection Forum. The Consumer Protection Forum is a body of South African consumer protection authorities, including all the provinces, consumer protection regulators such as the NRC and others. We meet in order to further cooperative governance, but also to try and streamline and look at ways and means to coordinate our work and to streamline our work in such a way that it is recognizable by any consumer in this country, and that we do not use different methods, different types of forms to assist consumers. So we serve on three of the committees, which are the, I know there's a complaints committee, I think it's called the compliance committee. There's a strategy committee, strategy and policy committee, and there's another committee, I just forget what it's called, education committee. That's where we are. When the operation of the ombuds schemes, I shall deal with that a bit later in the presentation. Product recalls is the next one. This is a key highlight for the NCC. Product recalls are huge. We have had, I cannot tell you the figure right now, but it is a large number of product recalls. The most well-known is the Ford Hawan earlier this year, when motor vehicles burnt down for no reason, and we were instrumental in in getting Ford to recall the Ford Kochas. There's recently been, this is not quite part of the annual report, part of the information of the committee, there's very recently been another recall by Ford of, I think, is it 1,200 or 12,000, I'm not sure, vehicles for not a, a fire-related issue, but also a product safety-related issue. And Ford has recalled all of these vehicles. We also, on the initiative of the NCC, just by looking at scanning the internet and so on, had recalled, had, what do you call these things, motor vehicles? Airbags. Airbags, they were defective airbags, clearly a safety issue. And there were thousands of motor vehicles recalled for the replacement of airbags. And so the list goes on. Now this is very big, and it's a growing area, and it's an area that the NCC needs to pay much more attention to as we move into the future. We facilitated recalls on a range of goods that are either unsafe, defective, including foodstuffs, vehicles, and medical equipment. I spoke about the accreditation of codes. The NCC has recommended two codes to the Minister of Trade and Industry for accreditation. They are the advertising industry and the franchise industry codes. And they are currently with the DTI awaiting the Minister's accreditation. Prior to this, we had accredited, the Minister had accredited on the recommendation of the NCC, the Motor Industry Code, including which includes an ombuds scheme, as well as the Consumer Goods and Services Ombud scheme and code. On page 5, the NCC conducted about 33 investigations last year and 36 inspections. The investigations conducted were mainly emanated from complaints around defective motor vehicles, second-hand motor vehicles. The Consumer Protection Act does not make any distinction between a new motor vehicle and a second-hand motor vehicle. One of them resulted in the National Consumer Tribunal finding in favor of consumers, and also there was a fine imposed on one of the perpetrators. I spoke earlier about the timeshare inquiry. The consolidation of the investigation, the consolidation of those complaints into different categories, that is what led me to finally conclude the approach to the timeshare inquiry. Because of the lack of funds at the NCC, the DTI funded this inquiry to date, and we were also guided by the Competition Commission in this regard. The inspections that were conducted was mainly in the retail sector, mainly with regards to labeling and issues and problems associated with food labeling, and also the expiry dates, and there was non-compliance was still found to be an issue. I indicated that three applications were made to the Consumer Tribunal to declare certain conduct in certain investigated conduct as prohibited conduct, and I said one resulted in a fine being imposed. I have already dealt with the opt-out register, so I'm not going to spend any more time on that. Honourable members, we are also publishing an external newsletter. And for the year under review, we had done the three that we had indicated we would do, and that project is well underway. The NCC's in this manner extended its reach, and the newspaper also forms the basis of for dialogue on specific consumer-related issues. The NCC's irregular lease for the last 5 years came to an end, thankfully and mercifully, because we had irregular expenditure on our books for all those years, which predates my appointment as commissioner of the NCC, and one couldn't wait for this period to be over so that one could start with a clean record, as it were. So we've moved to the South African Bureau of Standards building since it's a year now. We've been since October last year. I must thank this committee and Parliament for its efforts and its support in us obtaining alternative accommodation. This committee was very concerned about the NCC and the fact that we hadn't secured alternative accommodation much earlier. It appears that we now have permanent residency at the South African Bureau of Standards. This has led to, or will lead to, further stability within the organization, and all former problems with regard to the irregular lease is now resolved. Next slide, please. This is just a slide to indicate the reach that the NCC has achieved over the past year. We have featured prominently in the press. The NCC made the headlines several times. We have appeared, or I have appeared, on national TV, all the stations, on several occasions. The press, I don't think a week goes by without the NCC being featured in the newspapers, and the radio stations as well. That not as often as the written media, but also very often. So as far as our visibility is concerned, I think that the NCC is doing exceedingly well. With regards to statistics for the consumer goods and services ombud and the motor industry ombud, I must say that the strategy for the creation or in the creation of the ADR mechanisms and schemes are working. ADR services are provided at no cost to consumers by both these accredited schemes, and they have assisted tens of thousands of consumers over the past two to three years. They also have been raising more awareness with dealers and manufacturers and so on in the sector. The important thing is that they report regularly to the NCC, and the NCC monitors the work of the two ombud schemes. There's continuous interaction between the two ombuds and the NCC, and must also remember that these schemes are funded by the business sectors involved and not by anybody else. It's the all the role players within the industry. With regards to the disputes are resolved through mediation, conciliation, and the key objective is to provide accessible, free and speedy service. I did indicate that we play a monitoring role here. Now, you must remember that in the beginning, the NCC was overloaded with tens of thousands of complaints that we couldn't deal with. We firstly didn't have the resources, and we changed our strategy in order to do the type of work that we believe we should be doing, and I think we are well on our way to doing that now, and that these individual complaints of individual consumers are being dealt with by these relevant ombudspersons. slide 8 I'm not going to really talk to unless there are questions later perhaps. It just denotes the overall nature of the complaints received by the consumer goods and services ombud. And then there are some statistics on page 9. Talks to the numbers of complaints that were upheld and fell outside of jurisdiction and so on. So the CJSO closed over 6,000 cases, which included almost 2,500 files referred to them by the NCC. The average days to close a file was reported as 58 days.
Commissioner, yes. You know, what we like is not, of course, the Haltini Express, yes, but just a wee bit of a step up in that modulation, I know.
Thank you. Thank you. And I don't think I need to go into so much detail with the ombuds, so, yeah.
It's just that, you know, without being an, as it were, third or second gear, if you can just take it to fourth.
Okay, thank you. on slide 11, we have the 10 problem areas for the meiosis statistics. The most important problem areas is car engines, and the least one is service. Then, to move on to the regulatory context, I have reported to this committee on several occasions, and therefore I do not wish to waste much time on the regulatory context. I think I'm going to skip it. Safe to say that we are established in terms of 85 of the CPA, and our responsibility is to enforce functions in terms of the CPA. And we have concurrent jurisdiction with the provinces. Right? When it comes to strategic objectives, I'm going to do the same. That is, just to mention the two strategic outcomes: to promote compliance with the CPA, and to conduct research and promote advocacy and consumer empowerment. And then the most important thing that we do, of course, is to promote consumer safety and protection. Page 20 deals with the achievement of targets. There I'm only going to deal with where there was a variance, and then questions may be asked later about that. Now, the first variance that we talked to is that we achieved 99% of complaints within a period of 17 days, and a decrease, the reason for variance is that a decreased number of officials were used to refer matters, and as a result, efficiencies were improved. On the next page, we deal with the industry code. We were supposed to do this within a certain period, but because the code was submitted after the six-month period had lapsed, the delay was due to the franchise association.
Commissioner, look, not so fast you leave out the important information.
Oh, sorry.
Page 20, you whipped over this one about a decreased number of officials being responsible for the efficiency. That's quite gobbledygook. How could a reduced, decrease in the number of people dealing with something automatically lead to a reduction in the thing? I mean, it doesn't make sense. Tell us about this.
Chair, may I ask our head of enforcement to respond to that? Thank you. Page 20.
Thank you, Chair. On the reason for variance, we stated that few people were used to be conducting the referrals. In the past, what we had done was that all the complaints that were assessed by officials, let's say we're talking about 12 officials who were conducting the referrals in the past, what we did is we then started getting those officials to scan the complaints to few complaint coordinators who were then sending them out in bulk. So we had three senior complaint coordinators who these complaints were scanned to. which then reduced the number of the people that were used to refer the complaints. So we had dedicated complaints coordinators who were three senior complaints coordinators to refer. Thank you, Chair.
But I do agree, Chair, it doesn't seem to make sense upon the reading of it. The next one is the first one on page 21. The reason for variance there is that the six-month deadline for us to have submitted or completed this matter was the delay by the Franchise Association themselves in submitting their responses to the Commission. It was beyond our control. With regards to the investigations, we had done 33 investigations. We were supposed to do 12. Now, the increased number of complaints were not resolved ADR, and they needed to be investigated to determine the best course of action. And that is because we are required in terms of law to investigate matters that are not resolved. With regards to the inspections, we did more inspections than were required, and this was largely due to the ministerial campaign on the safety of paraffin stoves that wasn't initially part of our plan, and that increased the number. With regards to the applications made to the Consumer Tribunal, we had to do two, we did three, and the third application followed a successful negotiation of a consent order so that we could then make the consent order of court of the tribunal, and that's what caused the three applications then. With regards to the transactional advisor, I've already spoken to that earlier on page 24. Here, the vast majority of requests for explanatory notes and non-binding opinions received were not complex. So we did 100% instead of 80% of the work. Chair, this is just, I'm going to come later to the Auditor General and our audit. And
before you do that, Commissioner, let's go back to number 10. Is that right?
Number 10.
The top. I don't know if that's what's up there.
Yes.
And just explain this variance again, procurement of register, but not
of the opt-out register.
Mm-hmm. Opt-out register due to delay in procurement.
Yes.
The chamber for the transactional advisor had to be re-advertised after November. Okay.
Thank you. Does that make sense? Thank you. Thank you. I was just going to talk to the explanatory notes, and non-binding opinions. We did all that were received. We provided whatever proof we could to the Auditor General when they were conducting the audit. Because we had proof, hard copies, proof of what we had done. But all of them did not appear on a register that was kept. And for that reason, we then got a finding against us because it wasn't on the register. Here, the next one, we're talking about 27 workshops. We had to conduct 24. In our view, we did 27, but we had to agree with the Auditor General that we'd done only 10, and this was because our annual performance plan talked about 24 workshops, but the Auditor General, when it looked at all our other documentation, found in one of our documents, one SOP document, that we had indicated that we should have at least 50 persons present at each workshop. No, consumers or and when they added up the figures, they found that there weren't 50 at all of these workshops, and therefore we hadn't conducted 27. We conducted only 10 because 10 had 50 persons present. So that was one of the other issues. And then we got a finding on performance information. We conducted 3 more business compliance workshops, increased interest from stakeholders, but also requests from stakeholders to have these done caused that. Chair, I come to the end of what I wanted to say. I tried to be as brief as possible with you. And may I then request that I allow, that Chair allows the CFO to take us further with this financial management, if you don't mind.
Certainly, I mean, we didn't acknowledge everyone at that particular time, but we do have, what is it here, we've already acknowledged Mr. Mkhwana, CFO, Mwilwa, well, we hadn't acknowledged Mkhwana, the CFO, the head of the enforcement division was, of course, yourself, Ms. Mwilwa, and then the company secretary, Mr. Baba Kulji.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the committee. On slide 27 is our financial position for the end of March in 2017. What I would like to highlight there on the financial position is that in 2017 we managed to reduce our receivables balances to bring them down, because that's one of the concerns that was raised in 15-16, and in 2017 we managed to bring that down as our collection days have improved significantly. And then on our assets, we did not procure much in terms of budgetary constraints, so the computer equipment and furniture that we have is aging. Hence, the balance for our non-current assets is just coming down. And then in terms of our current liabilities, for the year, there was an increase from 2.8 to 3.3 million because most of the projects, the major projects like your research projects and the appointment of, not the appointment, but some of the work that was done by the transactional advisor was finalized in March, which was closer to year end. And our provisions have also slightly increased as a result of mainly movement in leave provisions. But in terms of the financial position and the management of working capital, we have significantly improved from 2016 to 2017. And then on the segment of financial performance, our transfers that we received from the DTI increased with about 3% from 54 million last year in 2016 to 56 in 2017. There was a baseline reduction as a result of the accommodation agreement between the SABS and the NCC. And hence is also reflected in the stage, the line item that says services in kind. That 3.8 million is essentially the market value of the services that we are receiving from SABS that are related to office accommodation, that we are not paying them for that, but it has been done through the baseline reduction via the DTI. Our employee-related cost was about 40.7 million. The other issue relating to employee-related cost is that whenever there has been resignation throughout the financial year,
some positions were reviewed in the structure to allow appointment of a certain key position where we feel that we could achieve more by reviewing certain position and how we appoint and break down as to meet our operational requirements. Our general expenses was 21 million, and then depreciation and amortization basically relates to the write-off of capital expenditure over the useful life of assets. And then we had a loss on disposal, because when we moved from our old offices in Centurion to the SABS offices, some of the assets were a bit old and some were not going to be required when we moved to the SABS, because then we were going to use some shared facilities at the SABS. We had a deficit of 976,000. It's not unauthorized expenditure, because we also had an approval from National Treasury to retain the cash surplus that was coming from the 2015-16 financial year for 2.1 million. And then when you look at our budget with actual amounts, like saying that on the deficit of 966, it's not really unauthorized expenditure, but some of that was funded from the cash surplus that we received from National Treasury. And then on the, I think we've already talked to the adjustment in the final budget was as a result of the baseline reduction during the adjustment estimate period to give effect to the accommodation arrangement. And then the services in kind has already been explained. And then on the general expenses, on the income statement front of face, there is a 3% variance, which looks like we overspent, but those funds were the ones that were funded from the cash surplus that National Treasury approved. And next slide, please. This is just to give expenditure per program. We have four programs at the NCC. The first one being administration, generally including all the support functions. And then we have program two, which is promoting compliance with the Consumer Protection Act. And then program three to be a world government and capacitated organization. And then the last program is about research and conducting consumer awareness on consumer protection matters. That's just the spending per program. And on the irregular expenditure, it's reported in the annual report that the NCC has irregular expenditure of 7 million. 76% of that 7 million comes from the lease related contracts that were related to the prior contract for office accommodation, and that has come to an end because we've since moved to the SABS building. And then in terms of the current year expenditure, which irregular expenditure which was new, it was 1.7, and the cost for those new cases was that we had what we thought as what we defined as emergency cases relating to 10%. And then there was issues of functionality criteria relating to 87% in three projects. And then there was just one case in terms of verifying a tax clearance certificate. And then in terms of the Auditor General report, on performance information, which is predetermined objectives, the NCC received a qualification based on usefulness and reliability on the program. And then in terms of the financial statements, the WAM statements that were corrected, resulting in an unqualified audit opinion. and there were also issues on compliance with legislation around mostly SVM related legislation. Next slide, please. And then the slide 37 is just to explain to say which areas resulted in qualification on performance information. On advisory opinion, Commissioner has already explained that it was an issue of recording some of those opinions that were offered to consumers on the register. And then on the trend analysis, insufficient audit evidence was provided, resulting in misstatements. And consequence management has already been started on the after the audit has concluded. Next slide, please. And I think here is just to explain the some of the actions that the entity has included in their audit action plan to address the audit findings that have been raised. To say that on performance information, because some related to its technical indicators, that they would be reviewed with the monthly, quarterly, and annual reporting to ensure validity of the output reported, and also issues of evidence to support the outputs that are being reported on a monthly and quarterly basis. And then on the issues of dealing with misstatements in the financial statements, we're going to get our interims audited, because in the past we've prepared them well, but they were never audited. And also to improve on our review processes, because most of the recommendations that came from the Auditor General were around the review processes to eliminate material errors. And then on compliance issues, we've already developed a compliance framework that includes all the legislation that the entity that is applicable to the entity to ensure that the entity complies. And over and above that, because there were also issues with our own SVM policy, the policy has already been reviewed to align with the structure, because there was that misalignment between what is in the policy and the structure in terms of the number of people that are there to practically implement what's included in the policy. And then overall, there is, we acknowledge that there is a significant improvement that we need to effect in terms of establishing a proper internal control system or environment, which will also include consequence management. And we will also strengthen the monitoring and implementation of the recommendations that has been done by AG to ensure that our action plan addresses fully and effectively all those findings that the Auditor General has raised. And also the oversight structures in ensuring that these plans are properly monitored to ensure that they are fully effective. And then on the key challenges that are facing the organization, I'll just hand over to the Commissioner to take the committee through.
Very much. Back to the Commissioner.
If I may, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm not going to take too much time. I've already spoken to the underperformance against the annual performance plan not being a result of key challenges faced by the NCC, but to the contrary, that the underperformance areas were beyond its control. It's been explained in the highlights. I've also talked to the industry code and the reason why that was late, because the delayed response from the industry itself, and the opt-out registers also already been dealt with. This thing leaves one with the lack of resources, both financial and human resources. Honourable members, the NCC has a huge responsibility. We do important work. the role of the NCC in the economy to facilitate creation of certainty through proper regulation cannot be underscored. NCC is beginning to take matters to the tribunal and fines are being imposed. We can only do so selectively due to lack of funds. Essentially, we have approximately 13 million rand in goods and services budget. The NCC appreciates the National Treasury's constraints, and we shall continue to maximize our efforts with the available resources. What does concern us, however, is that we may not be able to meet the expectations of this house or of all the consumers itself in everything that is expected. With regard to the last point, it's the NCC is not part of the public service. We're an autonomous body outside of the public service, and we are a 3A entity. Our remuneration regime, however, is based on the DPSA. Now, this has caused some consternation amongst the union and staff members, and there's been agitation for parity of remuneration in line with other similar entities. They feel that the entities pay much more than what the DPSA rates are. In this regard, the DTI is in the process of establishing a bargaining chamber for its entities. There have recently been meetings. The service provider has been appointed to set up this bargaining chamber, and we hope that this will make things easier as we move forward. But then those are the... And then the biggest challenge we have, of course, is to obtain a clean audit. And for me, that is primary. And we've indicated that we are going to be auditing our interim financials. I am personally monitoring all the findings by the AG together with our risk manager. We've made much progress in this regard already. We have not finalized it all because some require much more work, such as, for instance, IT systems and IT hardware and that kind of thing. But with our continued efforts, I remain hopeful and confident that we will achieve this towards the end. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to you, Commissioner, as well as the team and members. You can sort of cut down on the Red Bull. I mean, it's very bad for your kidneys. Right. Let's have the engagement. Honourable Williams, who else is there?
This is best show. Tuesday after the holiday. Do you want to raise an issue, please?
No. Right. Go ahead, Honourable Williams.
Chairperson, I'll take it. I can take all the other members' time.
Exactly.
Absolutely, Chairperson. That's what I'll be doing. Firstly, thank you for your input. I just want to talk directly to the Auditor General's report that we received just before we went on recess with regard to the performance of the NCC. In particular, there's been a drop with regard to the number of key control areas that have now probably moved from good to of concern, or in two of the cases for intervention required. And I'm a little bit disappointed here because from what the Auditor General report says, it appears that your entity is the worst performing entity within the whole group of the DTI's stable, we'll put it that way. One of the concerns as well is with regard to the audit action plan that is also not being addressed here. So I'd like to know, have you got plans in place to change your the position that that the Auditor General has come up with, where most of your key areas or key controls are of concern or intervention is required. And then secondly, you're talking about the lack of resources, but two of the major problems within your organization is intervention is required around financial and performance management. And so you come here asking us for resources, but we can't see whether or not you are actually reporting correctly on financial and performance management. So it's very problematic for us, because according to the Auditor General, intervention is required. You've got red squares on that, which is very bad. So I'd like to know, what are you going to do to improve this? Because I haven't really heard a lot about the improvement from what the Auditor General raised. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Williams. Is there anyone else now who's come out with something? Honourable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. When I look at the disciplinary cases that you are having, I can see 16 cases. Can you elaborate more on those disciplinary cases, as well as the consequences that you've instilled in terms of the outcomes, and also in terms of your vacancy rate? It's currently standing at about 8 vacancies that you are having. Can you elaborate whether those are critical positions, how many are critical, and how do you plan or the timeline that you have in place to ensure that you fill those vacancies? Thank you, Chairperson. I'll pause there.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. You mentioned about the employees, which a reference was just made to HR by the Honourable Van Schalkwyk. I'm concerned with the training that has been referred to in your annual report. What kind of training are you anticipating? Because, as you know, when you took over, you had the numbers, but you didn't have the skills at the time left in the agency. And how have you been overcoming that challenge? Perhaps you could just share that with us. And, of course, the reference to disciplinary actions has already been referred to here. We would like to know something of the magnitude of those more important ones. With respect to the, I think it is an overarching over the public sector, and someone will correct me in the committee, but I understand there's a moratorium on the fulfillment of posts. Perhaps you could just clarify that once again for this committee. If that is indeed the case, does this then mean that you won't be able to fill these critical posts or what? If you can just get a clarification there. Over to yourselves, please.
Chair, may I ask the CFO to respond to the first two questions by the Honourable Williams? With regards to the vacancy rate, we must remember that this was an audit up to the end of March this year. Since then, I think we filled all those positions. I'm not too sure, but if not all, then they're about to be filled, right? So I don't think that is an issue any longer. With regards to the disciplinary inquiries, not necessarily disciplinary inquiries, but consequence management should have been the term used. There have been warning letters given most of this arise out of bad or none or poor performance, not because of any other type of conduct or any other type of misconduct. Then we have the consequence management arising out of the AG's findings. Those are still investigations at this stage. To establish exactly what happened there, what the causes were, which will then probably be followed on by some form of consequence management or other. With regards to the training, I'm not sure whether somebody else would want to respond to the training question. But the CFO, will you then look at the two questions on the AG, please, from the Honourable William?
Thank you very much. Right.
Thanks, Chair. The plan to deal with the audit action plan to deal with the concerns that Auditor General has raised has been developed, and the plan would address three key areas that AG looks at. Firstly, the plan is to address the issues of the internal work. Firstly, the first thing that the plan aims to achieve is the system of internal control, having that seamless system within the NCC. One of the key challenges that we had in the 2017 was that it's more on our ICT environment, that when we moved in at the SABS campus, to stabilize the environment, it took some time, and in the process, it affected some of our key controls when it comes to processing the transactions on the system, and it's an issue that we've already addressing with the SABS ICT environment and the service provider of our own system, because they're already working on ensuring that our ICT environment is very stable, and much progress has been made in relation to that. And when you're looking at the audit findings that were issued, already there has been progress that has been made to address the findings already. And one of the key things that we looked at is that was also a concern as per the Auditor General's report, was the quality of the financial and performance information that was submitted for auditing. And most of the root causes was our review processes that were not that very much effective. We've looked at the review processes to actually increase the level of reviews, and that combined assurance in ensuring that at the end of the day, the quality that of the information that is submitted is of the highest quality. And then on issues of compliance with legislation, some of the findings has already been addressed, because it was issue of registering for the UIF, which has already been addressed, and some of the SCM-related compliance matters are already addressed, because they emanate from the deficiencies or the gaps that was with our SCM policy, and the SCM policy has already been reviewed to address those gaps, and also to incorporate the new practice note and the regulations that have been issued. And then in terms of performance information, it was more on issues of the technical indicators, and that has already been addressed in the 17-18 performance information. And on issues of evidence, to say that the information that is reported should be supported by reliable, accurate evidence, that has already been monitored with the monthly reports and the quarterly reports as well. We do have the plan, and like Commissioner has said, he will be monitoring that plan to make sure that we implement 100% of those recommendations, but so far 79% of those recommendations have already been implemented that were issued by the Auditor General. And internal audit will also be coming in now in October to make follow-ups and also to test those areas that AG has raised in the past, to make sure that we have fully complied. And then on the issues of training, the training that we have done at the NCC last financial year, we mostly as per the skills development needs analysis that was done, but mostly it was a generic training. Like, for example, managers, they will offer training in strategic management. There was training on financial management. There was SPM training, but they were targeting a bigger group because we only have 1% of our personnel budget towards training. So it's only this year that we can focus on the job training specifically to also have to address some of the concerns that Auditor General has raised.
I think we've dealt with all the questions.
It's just changing. We don't always share the same opinion. Yes, Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Pichani.
Some of the concerns that the Auditor General raised were not just about financial management, but also about the leadership. It said that there is concern about oversight responsibility and also policies and procedures. So if you could just tell us what you're doing there. The Auditor General also talked, their major problem when they reported to us, one of their major concerns was the audit action plans across the board are not being implemented effectively. So what I want from you or from the entity is a reassurance that next year this time we won't be talking about the same things over and over again, because I've got last year's audit report and there isn't much improvement from last year. In fact, you've gone down a bit. So we want to see some improvement moving up, not moving down, please. And if you could just respond to what are you doing about the leadership oversight responsibility and the leadership policies and procedures, which is of concern to the Auditor General. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Williams, Honourable Kacharia.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just be interested, because I believe that the DTI is looking at rationalization of a number of its entities, and how is this going to play out in terms of your particular entity. Can you comment on that, and what considerations are you privy to?
Thank you, Honourable Kacharia. I do have a couple of questions myself. I think the pie chart on page 8, slide 8, is very informative, actually. 24% under agreements. Would I be correct in assuming this was related also to data here or other forms of agreement? That's the one. And then goods specifically would be what we all regularly understand. I'm not happy with this, it's not working, I bought it, you know, yesterday, and it's no longer working. The other thing is with respect to page, I've written here 11. Yes, you see, on the problem, the 10 problem areas, I mean, in a poor service, how would you classify poor service as such? You know, let's just take a car in for something, and that's when one normally thinks, rather than being served, say, in Woolworths, OK Bazaars or something. I mean, what are we actually talking about there? And then that's the poor service. And the engine, I must assume these engines are all these motor car engines, are they? Right. So we know what happens there. Right, just explain that, though. Did you include the kucha there, or was that another issue, you know, separate to the kucha? And the other one I highlighted here is a typo. Don't know who did this typing. Slide 33. It's a serious typo. Your second bullet there says current year irregular expenditure. It's not impractical to obtain 3 quotes. I thought you may have meant it's not practical. Did you? I mean, it's not impractical.
I think you mean practical, because it was gobbledygook there, kind of Russian or Greek or something. All right, coming back to that engine issue again, and the services and the legal, I think those are your high ones, and let's get some kind of understanding about what we're talking about and the level of satisfaction. These are your top 10 problem areas. And one has also been asked by one of our committee members who can't be here about the status of the Ford Kuga investigation. Where are we here as such? So over to yourselves, please.
Chairman asked perhaps to respond to the policies and procedures and that question perhaps, and the rationalization of agencies, if you can deal with that.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, members. Honourable Chair, insofar as the aspect of a slump in or a deterioration insofar as leadership oversight responsibilities and procedures are concerned, I think that is true. There has certainly been a slump that's clearly indicative from the reports itself. What has subsequently transpired is that the leadership has met with, of the NCC has met with the executive authority, including minister. Plans have been put in place to seek a genuine improvement going forward. In fact, the plans have been put across to the Director General in that regard, Madam Chair. And it's something that happened in the last 2 weeks at the department. Certainly, Commissioner is very concerned that he's going to be retiring soon, and he's given Minister an undertaking that he will retire with a clean audit. So it's one of those priorities that he wants to meet prior to his departure. I hope that assists in dealing with that particular aspect. Insofar as the rationalization is concerned, the NCC is not privy to any discussions insofar as rationalization of agencies of the DTI. It's something that I'm hoping the DTI will be able to deal with, and I think we do have members here, but it's not something that has been dealt with between the DTI and the agencies. I'm also concerned that it doesn't sow any panic following that, and hopefully it is cleared up by representatives of the DTI here. Madam Chair, I've dealt with the two issues that have been asked.
All right, Ms. Moyle, what will deal with the rest of the questions? Slide 8, slide 11.
Sorry,
Chair.
The DTI would like to see the acting operating officer, and just making sure about these names now. That is Ms. Matumela.
Thank you, Chairperson. From the DTI side, we just wanted to say that the rationalization process was finalized, and what it did basically was to do away with the boards of the regulators, the NCC being one of them, NCR, and NRCS.
Thank you very much, DTI. Can we move on then with the Commission, with your members, colleagues, senators?
Yes, Chair, if I may, the Head of Enforcement, Prudence Mayor, will deal with all the other questions, slide 8, slide 11, and the status of the Ford Kuga. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I will proceed to deal with the issues that the Chair has requested that we deal with. With regard to the issue of agreement, as you can see, it's an analysis of the complaints. Yes, the analysis of the complaints that were dealt with by the CGSO. They basically relate to mostly its dispute of what was agreed upon and what was received. So you will find that it revolves around different types of products that are in the market. So it's not like one company doing one thing, but you might find that a consumer in terms of when they were negotiating their agreement, was expecting something else, and there might have been a, so those are actually the matters that are ripe for mediation, that require a mediator to sit in the discussions, to give direction using the Consumer Protection Act to get a resolution. So that applies to the agreement. And also, what we are picking up with regard to the complaints regarding service is the fact that South African consumers are becoming alive to their rights. The quality of service, how they are treated when they go into the markets to trade. So you find that most of the consumers would then say, I was not treated kindly by the supplier when I was there for a service, and to either say the manager was rude, or the quality of the interaction. And we encourage that as the commission, because then it then means that consumers in South Africa are becoming alive to their rights in terms of Section 54 of the Consumer Protection Act. The issue of engines, yes, is quite a bit of a problem, because there's a lot of engine overhauls that are happening in South Africa, where you find that there is engine replacements that are being done on vehicles, and sometimes where consumers have paid a large amount of money for the engine replacement, and they find that the car is still defective. So we are finding that, with second-hand motor vehicle complaints, that is the majority of the complaints that we get. Back to the Ford Kuga investigation, as the honourable members are aware, the Commission has been conducting the Ford Kuga investigation, and the process was a bit delayed because Ford Kuga had appointed a law firm to deal with the investigation with the Commission, so they had requested a bit of time to familiarise themselves with the contents of the first batch of questions that the Commission had issued to the Ford Kuga. So after we gave them quite a number of questions that we posed to Ford Kuga, they then appointed a law firm to respond. They then requested a bit of time to interact with the numerous questions that we have placed before them. We have received the responses from Ford Kuga through their lawyers. The information is quite technical, and it's quite, because we had also requested information with regard to specific issues, the production of the vehicle and so on, and the specifications around what was wrong with the vehicle. So they've requested, internally within the commission, we are sitting with our legal team just to make sure that we've covered all the bases before we can close off on the investigation. So that's how far we are with regard to the investigation. It's quite at a very advanced stage. Thank you, members.
Surely, I think that that deals with the questions. Sorry, my voice.
No. Have we concluded then, do you feel? Right. Is there anything you believe that is outstanding that you'd like to have come back in writing? No. No, it would seem that you have covered this very effectively. I must say, I am very pleased that you've been able to take up our recommendation that you should move offices and out of that costly lease that was incurred before your time, and you're now with which other entity are you staying? Yes, well, maybe you can intervene there and smooth the communication challenges that exist there over coffee breaks, and the like. There's a lovely little garden there as well. So I'm sure we can rely on your good offices, Commissioner, in the interest of consumer benefits. Thank you very much to all of you for coming down. Thank you.
Chair, there is still the issue of the first quarterly report. I don't know whether we can deal with that or not.
Actually, members, I think we will go over that ourselves, do you think? But you can address us for 5 minutes on it, verbally,
But we'll go through it ourselves. Is there anything that you would like to highlight, as it were?
Not particularly, Chair.
Times the less said, the better, huh? Right. thank you very much. Right, and then, members, we're just going to be moving then into the National Credit Regulator, but just a minute.
May the NCC delegation then be excused.
So please, you ask. I know because last time when we had these long meetings, I know the Commissioner, the National Credit Regulator rather, will recall many people just scuttled out of the back door before we knew they'd left. But thank you. No, you may be released. Thank you. But of course, that doesn't apply to the DTI. Does it? And you can see how valuable you are having to come in there. We could have been off on a tangent there, but you were able to bring us back. You are essential. And the term group chief, group, does cover everything. All right, so now we've got the National Credit Regulator here with us, and we're looking at Mr. Nomsa Machigari, the Chief Executive Officer. We're looking at, I'm looking at who else is directly from yourself. That's Mr. Mashapa, the Company Secretary, and the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Majuleka, is that right? And then I'm looking at Ms. Tongwana. It's Mr. actually. It looks like it's my own writing, Human Resources, just shows how badly I write. But yes, yourself, the Deputy CEO. Thank you so much for being here. Now, if we can immediately go into this, Ms. Machigari, you're used to this. You come to many of our meetings in connection with debt relief, so I know you're used to the system. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and good day, Honourable Members. And officials from the DTI. This is the overview of the presentation. I'm not going to go through the various topics, but I will talk to each one of them as we go through. The NCR strategic objectives for 16-17 were to promote responsible credit granting, protect consumers from abuse and unfair practices in the consumer credit market, and address issues of over-indebtedness, to enhance the quality and accuracy of credit bureau information, improve NCR's operational effectiveness, and to ensure effective implementation of the National Credit Amendment Act. If honorable members will recall that the Act was amended in 2014, the regulations came into effect, or they were published in 2015, and most of the implementation happened in from 2016, and these are some of the regulations that were either published or came into effect in 2016-17, and that's the limitations on fees and interest rates. The interest rates and fees were reviewed down, most of them, and the determination of thresholds of credit provider registration, where thresholds for registration were removed. Everybody now who provides credit is required to be registered with the National Credit Regulator. And the determination of application registration and renewal fees, where we reviewed registration fees by registration, and that was reviewed slightly up. And in terms of regulatory engagement with key stakeholders, we have been conducting community outreach programs, and mostly in rural areas, and those are the different rural areas that we've been to together with and the various provinces, and we continue to conduct these episodes, targeting mainly pensioners. We've also conducted a number of consumer awareness campaigns together with the Credit Bureau Association and the credit bureaus on Know Your Credit Status. We've established the Credit Industry Forum, which meets on a quarterly basis. And in this forum, debt counselors are represented, payment distribution agents are represented, credit providers, both large and small, are represented. And it's a forum that has been established to work out, you know, challenges that the industry is facing and come up with solutions that may not necessarily be addressed, you know, by the Act. This forum is chaired by the NCR. The NCR held regular meetings with various associations and registrants and magistrates and local and international regulators. We also participated in a joint African dialogue conference together with National Consumer Tribunal, the NCC, CIPC, and the NRCS. And this is a forum that has been established to look at, to share information on consumer education, you know, investigations and so forth. I'm just going to take you through some of our key highlights. In terms of enforcement, we referred 39 matters to the National Consumer Tribunal. And these are matters involving banks, retailers, small credit providers, and debt counselors. There's one key case that I would just, in fact, three big cases that form part of the referral to the National Consumer Tribunal. And this is Louis Stores, Allied Capital, and West Bank. The main alleged contraventions in respect of Louis Stores is really around unlawful extended warranties and club fees. The matter was referred to the tribunal. The tribunal's judgment was in favor of Louis, but we are appealing the matter because we believe consumers were exploited in this regard. And we've got the, you know, pawn your car and still drive it. This was declared by the NCT as an unlawful and prohibited conduct.
Just a minute. I think this is a very important report, members, because we're dealing with, you know, debt relief. And it is it has a relationship with the NCR. And I'm really just appealing to all members to focus on what is being said. Right, do go ahead.
Allied Capital is appealing the matter. And in terms of West Bank, it's really around alleged unlawful debt enforcement where consumers are not voluntarily surrendering their vehicles, but in a way are coerced, you know, to surrender their vehicles. Now, in terms of raids, as the NCR, we've been conducting raids on an annual basis. Even in this particular period, numerous raids were conducted together with the South African Police Service in those various areas, in Gauteng, Northern Cape, Free State, and Limpopo provinces. And usually after these raids, you get a number of credit providers arrested, criminal cases opened, and we would refer some of these matters to the National Consumer Tribunal for prohibited conduct. A judgment handed down against Louis, again, this is on a different matter. This is with regards to loss of employment insurance as part of credit insurance to pensioners and self-employed consumers. After we started with the investigation, Louis decided to refund consumers to the tune of about 67 million. However, the National Consumer Tribunal has indicated that there has to be a full audit so that affected consumers are able to be reimbursed whatever insurance that they have paid. And in terms of occupational disability insurance, the sale of that particular insurance to pensioners and people with disability, Louis is challenging this on a technical point. The National Consumer Tribunal judgment agreed with us, and as I indicated, an independent audit is going to be done and affected consumers, you know, will be reimbursed from 2007. There's another matter that we did not include in the slide, but it also it is in the annual report, and it refers to the NCR approaching the High Court for a declarator order on the set of the common law set of principle of set of, where, for instance, banks would unilaterally take money from, for instance, a savings, a consumer savings account to pay off an outstanding balance on a credit agreement. We believe this is unlawful, and therefore we are seeking a declaratory order through the High Court. But the one matter that we are using in this particular instance is Standard Bank. Okay. The next areas of, you know, some of the highlights really center around the payment distribution agencies' distribution and refunds to consumers. You will remember that payment distribution agents are companies that have been established and regulated by the NCR to collect money from over-indebted consumers and distribute this to credit providers. In this period, an amount of 8.5 billion was distributed to credit providers. Refunds to consumers as a result of our successful enforcement, complaints resolution, and compliance monitoring amount to more than 100 million. And in terms of education and communication, there's been we conducted more than 490 workshops, exhibitions, activations, and roadshows. I spoke about the community outreach programs and Know Your Credit Status campaign. We obtained an equivalent of 254 million in terms of media coverage. This is money that we would have had to part with if it was not for the fact that we were able to get, you know, free publicity in newspapers especially. The NCR was featured in 556 radio and TV interviews and newsprint, and we got free weekly slots in various community radio stations that we have listed there. Our next presentation, Honorable Chair, will be on the annual performance information in terms of the targets that have been approved. In this period, in terms of improving compliance with affordability assessment regulations, we were able to achieve the targets both in terms of compliance monitoring and enforcement action that required to be taken. And in terms of compliance with provisions pertaining to the total cost of credit, we exceeded our numbers in terms of investigations and did not achieve our targets in terms of enforcement. And we've since reviewed our approach to enforcement. We don't necessarily have to rely now on one department to conduct enforcement, but we get other departments that does compliance monitoring to also get involved in taking enforcement action. And in terms of conducting reckless lending investigations, we exceeded our targets. But again, you know, in terms of enforcement, we've had to revisit the approach that we take so that we can achieve, you know, our targets at least by the end of the year, if not the third quarter of this financial year. Let's just go to the next one, which is increased compliance by credit bureaus in respect of consumer credit information. We exceeded our targets both, and then achieved our targets in terms of enforcement. That's credit bureaus. I think let's just go to the next one, SO4, which is to improve NCR's operational effectiveness. In terms of improving our operational efficiency through automated processes, we've been able to exceed our target, and this is as a result of the fact that we have a networking monitoring tool that is, you know, enables us to be, you know, to predict network failures before any downtime. And in order to ensure effectiveness of the implementation of the amendments and the regulations that, as I indicated, were either published or came into effect in this period, we have been able to you know, exceed our targets in terms of improving awareness and compliance. And this is in terms of, you know, the workshops and the multimedia awareness campaigns that we've conducted. And to ensure effective implementation of the National Trade Act as amended again through conducting special investigations. These special investigations are really around conducting raids, looking at issues of prescribed debt and garnish orders. We have been able to either achieve or exceed our targets, except that with, in terms of enforcement, we've only just, you know, partially, you know, achieved our targets. And as a, and this is as a result of the fact that we relied on one department, you know, to conduct or take enforcement action. But as I indicated, we've had to revisit that approach. Some of those special investigations really talk to looking at issues of unregistered credit providers because of the regulations that were passed and became effective in 2016, where now everybody is required to be registered. There was a lot of work that we did in that area to try and entice, you know, or force smaller credit providers to come and register with the National Credit Regulator. I will stop there, Honorable Chair, and hand over to the CFO to take us through the financial information.
Okay, good day to the chairperson and the honourable member, as well as the representative from our shareholder, the DTI. Thank you, CEO. I'm just going to quickly take through the members on our financial information. It's a summarized version of our the information that is on the annual report. Just to highlight the trends, the three-year trends in the previous financial year. In 2014-15, as the members have seen, and in the financial year 15-16, we've been posting deficits, that is your income versus your expenditure. But for the financial year 2016-17, we were able to post a surplus, a 1.5 million surplus, so which has been really an improvement as far as, you know, the making sure that our expenditure line is aligned to our income line or revenue line. For 15-16 financial year, where we compared the budget versus the actual. As far as the income is concerned, we had budgeted. Actually, the total budget was 127 million. Split into OPEX is 120 million and the capital expenditure, CAPEX, is 6 million. So how was then this 127 million spent? Looking at the by budget versus actual, budgeted to collect 127 million. That is broken down into the DTI grant, which then we received 100%, and the fees from the registrant. The actual, unfortunately, we could not meet the target. We were 6 million, 6.3 million short. Reason being, as the CEO has alluded to the fact that there were regulations that were passed. We, as the NCR, we reviewed the fees, the renewal fees that we collect from our registrants, and we had revised the renewal date from, you know, various renewal dates to one renewal date for all the registrants, which is the 31st of July 2016. I mean, 31st of July of every year. Meaning for the financial year 2016-17, all the registrants had to pay us by the 31st of July 2017. So, however, when we're budgeting, we did not take into account the apportionment of it because we're moving the registrants from their normal renewal date to this one date. So there was a bit of apportionment as far as the fees is concerned. So unfortunately, the budget did not take that into account. So hence the other collection on that. So as far as the expenditure is concerned, really we really put brakes on our expenditures. But at the end of the day, we wanted to align our expenditure with the income. So when we realized that we might not be meeting collecting on the total budget of 127 million, so then we had to align our spending trend to that. Hence, we are able then to spend within the budget, hence the surplus of 1.57. And I must say, 1.5 million, sorry. And I must say that, there were very creative ways of making sure that, we execute our mandate efficiently. Some of the creative ways that we made sure that we put a brake on our expenditure was that, when it comes to the compliance monitoring, the exercises or the monitoring was done in the office first. But if there's a need to go out there and visit the credit provider, then the department will do that. Hence, we saved a lot of money on traveling expenses. And I think the committee has also realized that when we come to the portfolio committee, we are just few, so we don't bring the whole the delegation. So that also assisted us to save on other costs as well. And one of also I might mention that the highlight as well, where this also assisted us to save costs, was when we worked together and engaged our internal auditors and our external auditors, where we looked at the creative way and efficient way of avoiding duplication of efforts, where our internal auditors will perform the same audits that the AG will perform. So we looked around to say, who's gonna perform what. And for the first time actually in 2017, where we find the AG putting reliance on the work that has been done by our internal auditors. So that has also saved cost on our audit budget. Now, moving on to the audit outcomes in 2016-17. Well, for the previous years, I've just looked at the previous 3 years, which is your 2014-15 and 2015-16. We have, as an entity, we have been receiving an unqualified audit opinion with no findings, so that is translated to a team audit. So we received that for the previous 2 years. In 2016-17, we obtained an unqualified audit opinion with findings. I'm just going to explain and just clear, take through the members, why such a regression, even though, I am not a fan of this word. It sounds a bit harsh, a regression, but we've moved from a clean audit to an unqualified audit opinion with the findings.
Maybe, every now and again one has to have a little, what do you call it, a sort of ad break or musical break or something, because I just feel members' interest waning. They've got to re-energize our thoughts, sort of jump about and jig and dance and just listen, okay? I tell you, this sort of thing can put you to sleep or it can wake you up. So I think we've got to train ourselves to wake up. And, for the presenters, sometimes throwing in a little joke here and there, just get people refocused on you. Right, go ahead.
Sure.
challenge for me, but I will leave that to my my colleagues at Advocate One, and they've got the jokes. So I'm an accountant, so I see black and white. I mean, number cruncher.
So just to come back to my presentation. So I just want to take the members through, you know, why we regret. But before I say that, can you just allow me to just put this disclaimer that the entity, the NCR is not in the ICU. In the ICU, it's not really.
You know, we'll be the judge of that. But carry on.
But I'm just putting it out there, honourable members. Basically, the root cause and what resulted in the entity, you know, regressing, it was around one particular transaction, which is on the how we accounted or the accounting treatment on the PDA interest utilization. Let me just pause and then try to just give you a bit of a background on that. The PDA interest utilization, as the CEO has mentioned, we registered the PDAs. So the PDAs, this is your payment distribution agencies. They collect funds from let me just say the consumers, they pay into the PDA, and the PDA would then distribute the consumer funds to the credit providers or those consumers that are undergoing the debt review process. So the funds, because those are a huge amounts that get transferred by the consumers or deposited by the consumers in the PDA account. So because of the time frame that it takes to distribute, so these funds, they accumulate interest. So as the NCR, we took a decision that all those interest that have accumulated or that have been earned on those consumer funds, that they should be transferred to the NCR. Not that the PDA, they should use it for their operational issues. And that was also approved by the minister. So in 2015. So so we, as the NCR, we've got these funds that the PDA in the form of interest that they would transfer on a quarterly basis to the NCR. So we had sought the approval to utilize these funds for consumer related activities or consumer protection related activities. So these funds, they have been deposited in a designated account within the NCR. So the issue was that how do we account for this PDA interest that we utilize for consumer related activities? Yes, in our account, how do we then account for the transaction in our books? As the NCR, the view that we took was that we have been accounting for these funds using the principles of GRAP 1. And so, but I mean, I can later through questions just to interrogate it. But according to AG, they are saying we should have accounted for this transaction using the principle of GRAP 23. And I must say there's been really an engagement to and fro, because at first how they identified this was through inquiry, because for them this is unique, this was a unique transaction for them. So as we're taking them through, then they recommended that we should have accounted for this for GRAP 23. I must say, because when we challenged them on that, because also this transaction, it is not a clear cut GRAP 23 transaction. But I mean, at the end of the day, we then accepted that we will use the principle of GRAP 23. And I must say that I mean the process or the journey. The audit journey that we embarked with both the AG and the internal auditors in 2017,
it was a long one, because even the DEAG, they did and then performed an interim audit. This was not picked up in the interim audit, so there were no findings there. So one then, at that time, assumed that because the result of an interim audit is indicative of what's going to be the result in the final and in the final audit. We're a bit taken by surprise, because even this transaction has been accounted for using the principle of graph 1 in the previous financial year, which was 2015-16, where we got a clean audit. So where we are now, we agreed with the AG that we will correct, actually the correction of that then resulted in the material adjustment of about 4 million in our books for financial year 2016 and 17, and 2.5 for the financial year 2015-16, because we corrected retrospectively. So where we are now, which is then just a summary of our plan of action, of which most of it has been done, actually. These were the recommendations that we come up and we develop a procedural manual, where then we are clearly stating that this is how we are going to account for this transaction going forward. We have done that, and the policy or the manual has been approved. And I mean, on an ongoing basis, we are accounting this transaction in terms of graph 23. So, and the audit report, that was that the AG presented, where you will see the areas of concern, really is around the treatment of this, because it also talks to the financial statements, that our financial statements were not submitted, not submitted per se, but the treatment that we used for this particular transaction was not in accordance with Graph 23, according to them. But I can take through the members should questions come up.
And I've got an idea, because you've also included your first quarter report, but let's just get there.
So I will hand back to the CEO, but then was just the only issue around the audit outcomes, the performance information, there were no findings. So I'll just hand over to the CEO.
Right, I see, when it comes time to the questions and comments, we note here the graph 23, it refers to revenue from non-exchange transactions. But you were saying, no, you don't agree with the auditor. So, just finish off with the presentation. You can see, we need this focus of our members here, right? So just proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think I'm just going to quickly take you through the first quarter of this financial year, 2017-18. In terms of the targets and whether we've been able to achieve these targets or not, we've either achieved or exceeded in the first quarter. So I would like to take this as read by the honourable members and maybe just take questions. Honourable Chair, if you don't mind.
Okay. Here we are. I think very enlightening, CEO, because you can see here now members can't wait to engage. By show of hands, Honourable Kachalia, Honourable Williams, Honourable Kierkegaard. Shall we put your hand there too, Honourable Van Schalkwyk?
Thank you. I've taken the chair's injunction to listen carefully to your presentation, and I'm pleased to say that despite our normal role, which is to give people a severe time here, I'm impressed by your presentation and commend you accordingly.
Fair.
I tell you, it's a rare coming from the DA, but I think it is certainly very sincere. Thanks. Honourable William?
Thank you, Chairperson. I, on the other hand... Okay. In the Auditor General's report that this committee received in the in the previous quarter, the NCR key controls have drastically worsened since the year before. So, in other words then, with regard to leadership, of concern to the Auditor General and, of course, to this committee, is oversight and responsibility, policies and procedures, and ITC governance. With regard to financial and performance management, its proper record keeping and design and implement of IT controls. There are some others as well, but those are the ones I'm highlighting. So what I'd like to know is, what happened between last year and this year for you to suddenly drop down so badly, and what are you going to do to get yourself back up again? And Chairperson, one of the things I'd like to raise, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but I'm going to raise it, you can correct me if I'm wrong. When it comes to the BRRR report, I think that there should be consequences for entities that don't get all green blocks, or with regard to key controls, they need to have it good, all good. I mean, we sit here every year and we say you've got red, you've got yellow blocks, and then the next year they come back, they've got the same stuff. There's no consequences. We need to somehow, in our BRRR report, request that there be consequences for failure to actually get these blocks green. Thank you, Chair.
Correct to understand it's green, yellow, and red or something.
That's correct, Chip.
Can you just hold it up then where I can have a look at the colours?
Chairperson, what I was saying, with regard to the National Credit Regulator, there's just green and yellow. But I'm talking in general with all the entities, there are red blocks as well. But every year we get this, and then what consequences are there? They just come back next year and we say it's bad, what are you doing? You know, we need to have consequences, Jack.
Yes, now I agree in principle, and what I need, you know, it's so important for us to ensure we have seven people here, because very good sound points are made. Just what happened before we went to a constituency. And we can't take the resolution here to take it through to a recommendation. So we'll need to bring that in tomorrow. Please remind me so that we ensure that it goes forward in that manner. But having said that, let's go to the Honourable Tierko.
Thanks, Chair. We welcome the report. However, the graph thing, you need to explain to us graph 1, graph 23, and what made you regret, because if your internal system is in place and you know you need to review and update your policies, and the next thing, you get findings, unqualified with findings. So the question will be, are you not having your system in place, or you have removed some of the stuff, or what happened there? Because if your financial situation is changing from not, I don't know whether you didn't submit the financial statement or what changed there, that's what I don't get. You cannot get unqualified without findings. Then the next thing, everything, it goes from good to bad. I need to check there. Or you are becoming relaxed and then the things starting to fall apart. I don't know. So if you get used to the system, you relax, and somehow you'll have some casualties. So clear me that, what happened exactly? And did you encounter problems in the process, or what exactly happened? Because I really don't, from here, you're going straight to qualify the way it's moving. So clarify me now to say, this is was the problem. That from not that the AG told you this is the problem. What measures did you take yourself to say, now we're not performing and we'll have a problem?
Thank you very much, Honourable Tierko. Honourable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. Seeing that we've also received a quarter one report, I know that you've had vacancy rate of 21.7%. Can you give us an update of where you are currently standing? And also when you've been explaining that you're experiencing or one of your challenges is in terms of inadequate office space, can you also explain that and if you've dealt with it and how you're going to deal with it if you haven't dealt with it yet? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van Schalkwyk and other members. The one issue, there was a reference to it as well about, you know, so much from the grant and so much from this, that and the next thing. And the reason why the projection, the budgeted income, 127 million point two, and the actual 120.4. You did refer to that. But what puzzles me is that, and DTI could come in here as well, part of that is put down to the regulations pertaining to the new renewal date of the 31st July moving to August. And that being the case, you then presumably had a cut, you know, the amount that people were paying to you, the registrants, etc. And it was because of that you list the reason you didn't get this full projected income or revenue. So I'm asking DTI, do you have a relationship, shareholder? So did you not brief the NCR that this was impending? Because normally you don't just drop a bomb on people, you know, not war, in a relationship, yeah, shareholding. And so didn't you have consultations and say, look, you know, we're looking at this, this deadline's going to be changing, guys. Take that into account when you budget, because this could be the case. So just respond, please, DTI.
Would you want to
take someone by telephone? Oh, no.
Someone over there, right.
Thank you, Chair. The 31st of July date was the date that was actually agreed upon between the DTI and the NCR. And unfortunately, July comes in within a financial year, then that might have actually brought some challenges. But however, for compliance purposes, because we wanted companies to comply, we had to make sure that a reasonable date, which is within a financial year, is agreed upon to ensure compliance. Probably in the next financial year, there will be quite a huge improvement because the registrants would have been quite very much aware of the deadline. And the 31st of July was also put there because of the, not necessarily reluctance, but delays from registrants to respond whenever they are required to submit their information. But there was a well, there was consultation with the stakeholders in this regard. But the
looking at this and trying to make head or tail of what you're saying, are you saying that you're trying to fit this in with the financial quarterly periods? And I'm just thinking, what is the beginning of what is the first quarter from when to when?
First quarter starts from April to June, and then the second quarter starts from July until September.
Yeah, but so it really, you know, doesn't make sense what you're saying, because the renewal date is the 31st of July, right? And it was the 31st renewal fee for all registrants whose renewal was after the 31st, you know, of August. That would have been in the second quarter then. Is that what you're saying, or what?
Yes, that's what I'm saying, Chair.
Still in the same financial year, that period.
Yes, but if you look at the previous year, the date was not necessarily the 31st of July. It was actually an attempt to push compliance
with, I mean, in respect of the stakeholders. But my understanding is that the situation would definitely improve in the next financial year. Yeah, because the regulation had just recently came into force. So we were looking at compliance issues, and because of the history of non-compliance from the stakeholders, then we had to push. Yes. But then mm-hmm. it might have led to some of the unintended consequences, as you might have highlighted.
Look, we won't go into a dialogue here, but what you're saying then does not accord with what we've heard from the NCR. Honourable Kacharya.
Thank you, Chair. Having commended you, can I just backtrack a wee bit and ask one particular question for clarification? On page 11, in terms of promoting responsible credit granting, your investigations, you say, are clearly exceeded from 40 to 52, but on enforcement you haven't particularly achieved. And I think it might be useful if you were to let us know or elucidate what and clarify what the new enforcement approach is, so that we gain an understanding to how you're going to fix this particular issue.
Right. You've also heard Honourable Kacharya's question as well. There are a couple of others I've got, not that we've left that last one alone at all, but there are a few others, and that is targets. Yes, you referred to that one as well, and so on and so forth, but the vacancies have already been alluded to, but you have two dismissals. Now, I don't recall you unpacking that, the dismissals. You don't normally just dismiss someone because you dislike the colour of their dress or pants. So that's my final one there. Okay, so members, you've asked yours for the moment, and then we'll ask Ms. McCandid, rather to just stay here a moment. Can you respond then, please? Does DTI want to complete its point while they're deciding who speaks?
Yes, Chair. Chair, on that point, we would definitely like to come back to you, you know, in writing fully and clarify all the rationale behind that decision. Yeah.
I think that's very wise, because you were getting tied up in knots at that point. So, yeah, that's fine. Over to the NCR.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll just touch on some of the questions that have been asked and ask my colleagues to fill the others. Vacancies in HR, we are now sitting at 18.4%. It was 22 the year before. We are now sitting at 18.4%, and there are four critical positions there. These are two junior legal advisors, one HR supervisor. I missed the fourth one. But the others are your data capturers, you know, call center agents and so forth. But the four, you know, of those vacancies are in critical positions. What we've also decided to do is that in terms of where we had officer positions, sometimes we just split that into two junior officers. Because we've realized that as the NCR, we've become the training ground for especially the banks, where most of our staff members are poached, and therefore we've discovered that once we bring them at a very low level, you know, they stay on, you know, for some years, you know, even after they've been trained. And then in terms of the new enforcement approach, Honourable Kacharya, we have the complaints department, we have the compliance department, which monitors credit providers' compliance with the Act. We've got the debt counseling department, which focuses on debt counselors' compliance with the Act, and obviously the investigations, you know, and enforcement department. Now, we relied, you know, throughout the years on this one department, the investigations and enforcement department, to take enforcement action. And all the matters, you know, all the other departments would refer matters to this one particular department, which only has about 13 legal advisors and inspectors, and they cover the whole country. So what we then decided to do was to say, instead of relying on this one department to take enforcement action, now the different tools that we use in enforcing the act is that we would write an instructional letter depending on the nature of the contravention, write a letter of instruction with a deadline to, you know, to comply. If you fail with that, we then issue a compliance notice, which will also have, you know, indicate areas of non-compliance and deadlines. If you fail to comply with the compliance notice, we then refer the matter to the National Consumer Tribunal. So all these other departments that are doing compliance monitoring, they can write instructional letters to registrants. They can issue compliance notices. It's only when it comes to referrals to the tribunal that we would want the investigations and enforcement department to do that. Because, I mean, the compliance notice is a standard form that anyone can really prepare, as long as it's reviewed, you know, by the senior legal advisor. So that's the new approach that we've decided to take, so that we don't end up with one department, with all the referrals, you know, being taken by one department, which they also have, you know, capacity issues, because as I indicated, they only have about 13, you know, legal advisors and inspectors, you know, for the whole country. And remember, in terms of inspecting, in doing inspections, even people, officers in the other departments can go and conduct inspections as long as, you know, I issue those inspection certificates. So that's the new approach that we've decided to take, to fast track, you know, enforcement action that has to be taken, you know, against any contraventions. The adequate office space, we've had to do, you know, use the office space that is we've always had because of, you know, issues of funding. We've had challenges of funding. We've raised this with the DTI, is aware of that. But yeah, we found ways and means of getting people to share, you know, office space and so forth. Can I ask perhaps the CFO, Honorable Chair, to respond to some of those questions? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'm just going to first tackle the question. Actually, I will combine my response from the question raised by the Honourable Mr. Williams and Ms. Teko as well. So it talks to the audit outcomes or the audit opinion, the graph. The report that was presented by the AEG, it identified areas of concern which are in yellow. And, you know, about ones, okay, those areas of concern, the one on leadership that talks to the oversight responsibility, it's affected by the same transaction that we're talking about, because basically in their methodology it's saying the financial statement that you submitted on time had this error, you know, in accounting for this transaction using the principles of graph 1 versus graph 23. I will come and explain what are these statements talk about. And when you drill down as well, on your financial and performance management, the accuracy and complete financial, it's talking to the PDA transaction as well. Because by immediate implication, then it's saying you did not, you submitted a financial statement that was not accurate because of the treatment, the accounting treatment. And it also talks to compliance monitoring as well that is affected by that transaction. So they do, you know, take, you know, explain these areas of concern in their management report that is related to this issue. Then on the one, on the policies and procedures, that area of concern, really, it is not a for me, a material error of consent. How that came about was, there were about three policies
that talks to the budget process, which is the same process that is in the PFMA, whereas the NCR, we copied and pasted that process, the annual performance plan and so forth in our policy. So that policy and the cash and investment policy, and the third one, it talks to the strategy policy. Those ones, they were approved long time ago in 2007 by the board. Unfortunately, we could not locate the signed copy of that. So, and because that is also more than 9 years ago, we could not locate the board minutes that proved that those policies were approved. So subsequent to that, those policies we have approved. Actually, they just needed a proof of a signature that they were really approved. So there wasn't any contravention around those policies. So that's how then the issue on policies and procedures came about. So it was just those three copies of those policies that did not have signatures. And then on IT governance and also IT design and implement IT controls area, it is yellow for 2016-17 because last year, as I said, we have been engaging with the AG and our internal auditors, where then we say, who's going to do which audit? And these two assurance providers, they share notes. So the AG indicated the areas that they will audit on the IT, related systems. And it was agreed that our internal auditors, they will then audit those areas. Unfortunately, so our internal auditors, they did audit that according to, what was prescribed by the AG. And the audit was finalized, I think, in February 2017. So and the AG put reliance on that audit, meaning they took the finding as in at that time. So at that time when the internal audit has finalized the audit. Unfortunately, the findings that were raised then in February, which was subsequently resolved. Unfortunately, EAG cannot then tick off as being resolved. They need to do the follow-up audit of which then they're going to do actually this month after the 19th of October. So basically, what the issues there were, the issues that were raised by the internal auditors in February, but the AG did a copy and paste of that report, but they can only be able to take them out as being resolved after they've done their own follow-up audit. So as far as the NCR is concerned, the issues on ICT governance, they've been resolved. It's just that we were just waiting for the AG to rubber stamp it and tick that off. So that also talks to the findings that were done. Now coming back to explaining to the members, about this GRAB 1 and GRAB 23. GRAB 23 is a statement on revenue from non-exchange. Actually here, and then GRAB 1, the principle of GRAB 1, it's the statement that it's an accounting framework. It's the statement that gives rise to the other statement. But basically, it's a statement that talks to the basic accounting of any transaction. So your first point of departure, if you are confronted with a certain transaction, is to go first to the basics. To say, according to GRAB 1, what is this? Because it also talks to the definition and how you disclose this, all your financial statement and the like. But you'll find that because of the nature of the transaction of the government, transaction that we get confronted with, then the ASB will then develop a specific
graph standard or an accounting standard for a specific transaction. So hence we have so many graph standards. So on this one, because this transaction is a bit unique, the one element that we agreed with the AG was the part on the revenue from the non-exchange. So we did not really dispute that. Actually, how on graph 23 you treat with that one, you can actually treat that with even graph 1, because at the end of the day is how you release the revenue on your income statement. But where the issue was, our point of the departure was that the last leg of the transaction, as the NCR, we raise a receivable instead of reducing a liability. So it was the timing of the general entry. Because even if you have used graph 1 and graph 23, the effect of the transaction, it was going to be the same at the end of the day. But it was just one for that 1 month, because we were just finalizing the financial year. In March, we raised a receivable, and the following month, in April, we then reduced the liability. But the AG is saying, no, you should not even, in the first place, in March, raise a receivable. You should have straight, reduce the liability. So that's just where our, issues were, which also talks to the timing. If it was because throughout the year, actually, either even after you have used the principle of graph 1 and graph 23, it was the same effect. So it's just that timing issue in March, which was our financial year end. Having said that, it is not. I agree with them, because at the end of the day, it comes through the same effect. So if we agree that this going forward, how we treat this transaction is going to be graph 23, then it's fine. But at the end of the day, it's going to yield the same result. It's not going to change. It was not that we were under stated any amount or overstated any amount. It was just a timing issue. So
just one thing. I'm going to ask the National Credit Regulator to some of these more complex things. They may not seem complex to yourself, but already DTI was agreeing, they'll do something in writing. And I think it'll be useful for yourself to explain these 2 points around the crux, which, yes, arguably it could be a technicality. I mean, that's what some of these auditing companies are now saying, and we say it's different. So, we just need to clarify it. And I do know that there are a couple of questions unanswered. I think the Honourable Van Schalkwyk has just stepped out. And I think the Honourable Lerato wanted a clarity on something, notwithstanding that we had given her some information. But you may well ask that now before the questions, the responses continue. Do you want to raise anything, Honourable Lerato? Tuyeka?
Thanks, Chair. We accept that the written submission for the Grab 1 and Grab 2 is fine for us to know this. Maybe we need to have a class of accounting standard so that we know. When you say GRAP, we're no longer asking what is GRAP. But my question now, you're confusing me. You are saying there's no signature somewhere, 2007, and the board, and you. It means that's what I'm saying. You will go from unqualified with finance to qualified, because now, my question is, do you have a board currently? And if you are using 2007 policies that even the signature you were struggling to get, then what is the meaning of that? What is it that you're trying to tell us? Because 2007, yourself, is 2017, 10 years later, there's a problem of a signature. So how authentic is that signature? Can we trust that signature? is that resolution of those policies that you are using now applicable now, currently, as you are speaking? Or it will make things worse? I don't know, Chair. But it doesn't need to be answered now. I just have to get clarity in future to say, moving forward, how best can we arrest this?
So that question is responded to adequately in writing there. The board concluded that its existence in 2007. Now the question would be, the signature that was required on when the board was still in existence, what are the implications of that now? It's no longer there, the board. No, it doesn't exist as such. So let's just get that clarification briefly and then give us something back in writing regarding the implications of that and the policies. But let's just go briefly on these matters now.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I just want to clear a bit of a confusion. The policies that you are referring to, they were presented in the board, you know, in around 2007, right? The board was only disbanded in 2015. So those policies, the nature of those policies, because the context of it, you know, it was presented in 2007, you know, and then the review of those policies, they were done in 2014. Knowing that was done in 2014, right? However, you know, that review of those policies, when we presented to the audit committee, and I think that was around December 2014, we presented them a memo of the review to say for all NCR policies that have been reviewed, these are the amendments. But now when we gave that to the AG as well, they were not happy with that memo because they were saying that memo was not stating or did not list which policies were those. So, and the copies that we have of those policies, you know, that were reviewed in 2014 did not have the signature. The same signature that was on the copy that was presented in 2007. However, what we have done subsequent to that, on the 22nd of September, after the AHF issued this, we have gone back and reviewed these policies, and the current board now, which is the accounting authority, the CEO, has subsequently signed off on those policies. And what we have done is with the IT to say all those signed policies, let them be on our white drive, you know, and also just to improve on our record management, because the issue here, the gist of it was that we could not locate the PDF or the signed policy. You know, even when it was reviewed, because when we review messy policies, we don't know, normally then sign them all, 50 or whatever. But then we will prepare a memo to say, you know, even our internal auditors will also review the policy. So I think what we're learning now is that even going forward, when we're going to review and release policies, we even state then which policies we will do. That memo will serve as a signature for those policies.
You see, this is what I'm saying. Let's get this in writing, because that's going to be coming back. It's a reference has already been made with reference to the auditor, etc. The CRUP one, the new enforcement policy, let's get that very clear. And let's get the following ones back in writing as well. Because, that has impacted on delays that have occurred here. The other one was the dismissals. Let's have that in writing, the two dismissals. Important that we know that. You've responded to the critical vacancies and that sort of thing. But you mentioned the challenges regarding office space, but I haven't heard a response to that. In writing, please indicate what the response is to the office space. And I think, look, it's Tuesday now. These are easy ones. Just get them in writing to us
by Friday? Because I've been to your offices. I mean, lots of room for expansion there, isn't there? Loads of room, man. Wish I had some in my own garden. But anyway, I suppose if you want to put down a garden NCR, then of course there is limited space. No, but on a more serious note, let us hear what the restrictions are to you expanding that. There was one other issue, your Banksita issue, the partnership with learning organisations. That's very important to us as a country. You just tell us a bit more. It sounds like some good news coming in there. But you can hear what Honourable Williams is saying, and it's been pursued here and there by members. You know, we cannot allow any entity to go backwards, regardless of your explanation, which had so many twisted turns, you have to come back and write. We got lost on that journey. So it does tell us, look, when it gets to yellow, why? And this consultation between DTI, the major shareholder, and an entity, we cannot, you know, when this sort of thing is going to lead to yellow, there's a breakdown somewhere. There's a breakdown. So let's get that clear. And I mean, you did have one member saying marvellous things were and that kind of thing. And yes, by and large, you have done a lot of work. But we don't want regression. Because as we see it, the moment we see yellow, we're worried. We are going to speak to the Auditor General as well to find out when and how often do they engage with you, particularly when this sort of thing comes up about your interpretation and their interpretation of Grup 1 and Grup 23. That should have been avoided as well, and not during a post-mortem, you see, that kind of thing. So, but I really, I know you've been here all morning and you're always here, respecting the oversight, constitutional oversight power and authority of Parliament. So we do appreciate that from the National Credit Regulator. But just the final word then, CEO, do you want to say anything?
Not much, Honourable Chair and members, just to say that we are working towards a clean audit for this year. That's what we are going to strive to do. Thank you.
Aim high. Right, now members, some of you have been aiming for the lunch table there, and some have even disappeared to get better lunch, I suppose. But look, it's there. Try and grab whatever it is you can. One would like to get started no later than 2:15. Please. No later than 2:15 on that clock. Thank you.